Nitir Parshas Balak. In order to understand the Parsha of Bilam, the Yeshiva of Navardak, they used to give the following mashal. There was a shamish in a shul, and one day, one evening, he's cleaning up. He's all by himself in the shul, cleaning up last things, and he sees who comes into the shul. A renowned ganav, one of the well-known ganavim of the town that people are, the police are on the lookout for, and lo and behold, here he is. He walks into the shul. So the shamash said, "Ah, here's an opportunity. You know, maybe I can catch him red-handed. You know, stealing and turn him into the police, whatever." Of course, he was a little bit scared. He didn't know what he's going to do with this guy, but. So the shamash hidden underneath the bench, so the ganav wouldn't see him, and he was watching what he was going to do. So he sees the ganav, and he walks towards the Aron HaKodesh. So he says, "Oh my gosh, he's gonna steal a Sefer Torah." Got really scared. So now what am I going to do? How am I going to stop him? So he sees him walk up the Aron HaKodesh. He opens up the parochas, opens up the doors, and he starts crying. And he says, "Ribono shel Olam," says, "give me Ruach HaKodesh." Says, "Hashem, give me Ruach HaKodesh." So the shamash says, "Well, listening to this," he goes, "Wow." He says, I think this guy's not such a high madrega. He's gone through all the levels of Pinchas Ben Yair and, Torah, maybe he's a Hiras, Nikias, Precious, Dar. He's already up to Ruach HaKodesh, He's like the last thing, "Hashem, give me Ruach HaKodesh." So he couldn't believe it. The shamash decided, I don't have to be so scared of this guy. This guy's like, chetzi tzaddik, So I'll go up to him, and so he approaches him, and I figured nothing to be scared of, And turns to the ganav, and he says, "Sorry, I hope you don't mind me asking you, what's this? You're davening for a Ruach HaKodesh?" So the ganav says, "Yeah." He says, "Listen, in my business, he says, not easy. So sometimes I go into a house, fancy, beautiful villa, whatever, and I search through the whole house and I find nothing. Other times, I go into some shack where I figure I'm not going to find anything, and I find a whole treasure there, right? In other words, sometimes I waste a lot of my time because I don't know which house to go to, which house now, which has things, which not, and it's a big waste of time. And so if I had Ruach HaKodesh, I'd be able to know exactly which house to go to. It would save me a lot of time and effort." So the Nimshal is, so too with Bilam. Right? Bilam was given a tremendous gift. He was given the Koach HaNevuah. But what was he doing with this Nevuah? Right? He could have taken the Nevuah and been a Gadol in his own right. Instead, he took his Nevuah and this is high Madregas annoying, and used it to know how to curse when Hashem gets angry, etc., and use his mouth for the bad. Right? That's the lesson we learn from the Ganav. And so too, we have to also keep this in mind, because Hashem gives everybody his own gifts, his own kochos and talents. And the question is, what do we do with them? Are we using them properly, or are we want to use them improperly, like the ganav, like Bilam? It's a lesson we have to take to heart. It's a interesting shaila he brings on the pasuk Malay Beso Kesav Azahav. You'll see why in a minute. Rav Aaron David Duner, he's the Av Beis Din in London. He had the following shaila. Said there was a wealthy man in London, and he lived in the area there with the fancy houses, the wealthy people, and he checks his bank account one day. And things went in, went out, and he sees that he wrote a check that was cashed for $5,001. So, besides the fact he didn't remember writing a check for $5,000, but surely not for $5,001. Like, why would he ever write such a weird number, 5,001? So he was breaking his head. He says, "It's impossible. No reason in the world why I would have wrote a check for $5,001." Okay, so what was the next step? He contacted the bank to see, who the check out, who was made out to, the check. So he found out it was made out to such and such a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. So then he was totally confused because he didn't remember ever giving a check like that to a yeshiva. So he calls the yeshiva. And the yeshiva said, sorry, we can't help you. We don't know exactly because we're not in charge of, you know, soliciting funds. We have a mashalach that he does our collecting for us. So he's your address, you know. That's good. Who's the mashalach? He tells him. So he contacts the mashalach and he says, I heard from, I saw that I had this check 5001. I saw it from yeshiva, and apparently has to do with you. Like, what's going on? He goes, yeah, of course, it has to do with me. He says, what do you mean, of course? When I wrote you a check for $5,001, so he said, not exactly. So he said, well, what's going on? So he says, don't you remember? He says, what happened? So he reminded him. So a little while back, this mashallah came to his house, you know, to get a donation. So they're schmoozing about this or that, whatever. And then the Shulach happened to mention that after he's leaving him, he's going across the street to the Gvir on the other side of the street, in the big house across the street. So this one, this Gvir says, don't waste your time. He's a major miser. He's the biggest kumsan that could be. You know, he says he never, rarely gives more than $18. If you're lucky, you'll get two times high, you know, but that's like on a good day, you know. But for, you know, no matter, waste your time. So, and then he said that the Mashulach saying, and then you told me that you'll make a deal with me, if you remember. You told me that you were so certain that that guy's not going to give anything, that you gave me a check, made out to yeshiva, whatever, open, and you told me that you trusted me, right? That whatever that guy Gvir gives, then you can, I can write your check for a dollar more. In other words, he gives $18, I can write a check for me for $19, but no more. $36, I can write you for $37, $1 more than he gives. And that's what you told me. So I left your house, but instead of directly going over there, I decided to do a little bit of homework, right? Because this could be very, very profitable if I play my cards right, he said. So what did he do? He did some investigation. Who is this guy? Who's the Gvir, whatever? And lo and behold, what did he find out? That this Gvir is an older man. He was in the camps during the war with this Mashulach's father, who was alive still. So, he wasn't. The Gvir that was across the street, okay, his father was in the camps with this Mashulach's father. Now, the Gvir's father wasn't alive anymore, but Mashulach's father was. So Mashulach contacted his father, and he says, you know about this? So he started to get some information about his father, you know, the Gvir's father. And he said, yes, you know, he was a big tzaddik, and he said, you know what, he was very, very, very careful with Kavodah Torah, and not only that, he used to help the Talmidei Chachamim in the camps. He used to give of his own bread to the Talmidei Chachamim, and when bread, a little bread he had to eat, he would give it to the Talmidei Chachamim, they should have bread. He was a big tzaddik. Anyway, he heard these various stories, whatever. Okay, good. Now he's got his, thinks his story prepared. So then he goes across to the other Gvir, knocks on the door. Sure enough, the maid or whoever it is answers the door and says, yeah, I'd like to come for, I'm coming for a donation, yeshiva. Says, just a second. Comes back with an $18 check. Was expected. So he says, no, please, I'd like to know if I can speak to the Baal HaBayis himself. He says, because my father and his father, you know, were together in the camps, you know, and I have some stories about it. He goes, oh. So he comes, so sure enough, the Baal HaBayis comes, he says, your father was with my father in the camps, you know, please come in, you know, what can you tell me? You know? Anyway, he says, I'm schmoozing, tells him all these different things for an hour. And he tells him, he says, you know, your father was such a lover of Talmidei Chachamim, he gave of his bread to his little bread he had, he used to give. So he said, so listen, he said, look, you're his son. He says, your father, you know, cared about Talmidei Chachamim, so you have to follow in his footsteps. You know, it's none of these $18 checks, you know, you gotta, come on, follow in your father's footsteps. So he says, you know, you're right. He wrote me a check for $5,000. So, the deal was, whatever he writes, he told them, you said I can write a check for $1 more. There's your $5,001. So the shaila of the Gvir was, does he have to, can he, you know, ask the yeshiva for the money back? Meaning what? that he said, look, I didn't think, I never dreamed that you're going to get $5,000 of the guy. Impossible, right? It was just, okay, you happen to get lucky, you know, your father, his father, whatever. But I didn't give it all das that. I gave my check and think you're going to give it an $18, $19, $20, $37, whatever, but not $5,000. It's a toast, a neder betos, right? So that was his taina. So the child was brought to Rav Nissim Karelitz, and Rav Nissim said like this. He says, really, you have to see what type of guy this Gvir is when it comes to his business dealings. He says, there are many wealthy people that they made their money because they're very daring. You know, they buy these speculative stocks or whatever, and they can either lose all their money or they can make millions. And they take the chance, they take risks. So he says, if this Gvir is a risk taker like that in his business dealings, so then, you can't say, yeah, but when it comes to giving staka, he doesn't take risks. He's very cautious, and he would have never taken a chance of that maybe he's going to have to give staka. No, look, come on. If he takes his chances in his business, so come on. He has to take chances in his, they can't say, by staka, I don't give chances, take chances. So that's number one. He says, but Rav Nissim concluded and said, and even if he happens to be a cautious guy, even in his business dealings, but he says, since we're talking about stock over here, to yeshiva, he says, if you want my advice, I wouldn't take the money back so fast. You know, let him have the money, it's a shiloh here at staka, neder, staka, and to for Torah, and it's, if you want my advice, he says, leave the money where it is. Next, he brings a very amazing story. Story of a fellow named is Moshe Nabati. He lived in the south in a moshav called Patish. And he was a farmer by trade. And he used to rent tractors from Moshav Komi Miut, and to do his plowing, whatever, in his field. So, story goes that once he... So this story happened like 4 years ago. 4 years ago, this Moshe Nabati, he rents this tractor, and it happened to be like a very modern, up-to-date, top-of-the-line tractor. Okay, meaning what? It has a special device. It's a sensor that when the tractor is he had a tractor that he was renting for plowing. So he has these big plows, you know, crunches up the ground or whatever. However, if the in front of the tractor is iron, a piece of iron, which could ruin the tractor if it, you know, the blades or whatever of the thing, it has a special sensor. It senses the iron and it stalls the tractor out, so you won't drive further than drive over the iron. Okay, special thing. So what happens? He's plowing his field, and there's a big, huge tractor that's crunching everything. Crunches everything. Rocks. It can even break up rocks and logs of wood. And he's going crunching, going along, plowing his thing, and all of a sudden, stalls out. So he assumed that there's something in the way there. You know, some piece of iron or metals, whatever. So he gets down from his tractor and he looks around and doesn't see anything. You know, he moves around some of the dirt or whatever, and everything seems clear. Which is very strange. So he starts up the track there again, and then he wants to go forward, you know, pushes the accelerator. Again, it stalls out. This is very strange. So he had an idea. He says he wants to see if something's wrong with the tractor, the motor, whatever. So what he did was he started it again. He went in reverse. If it would go in reverse, it means nothing wrong with the tractor. It works, you know. So he puts it into reverse, and he's able to drive backwards. So he says, okay, so everything's fine. He puts it into forward again. Boom. Again, it stalls out in the same place. Because this is very strange. So by now, all the workers are there, and they gather around, and they say, I don't know what's going on over here. So they're lurking around and trying to see that. And the coast is clear. They don't see anything in the way. Not no reason why the tractor should stall. So what did they see that's lying there? A plastic bag. So they said, okay, maybe there's something under the plastic bag. They pick up the plastic bag, nothing's under there. So somebody said to him, well, why don't you look inside the plastic bag? So he goes, well, even look at what can be in a plastic bag to stall out this huge tractor already, you know? So he said, just look inside the bag. You see, who knows what's in there, whatever. So he goes, that's ridiculous. But he just opens up the plastic bag, and what does he see? a pair of tefillin. So what happened? That's not a piece of metal, it's a piece of leather, right? But by miracles, right, Hashem has his ways, that the tractor with the blade that was crunching came to the tefillin, and they saw that it actually went into the plastic bag, and into the plastic bag that the tefillin was in, just when it came like millimeters from the actual tefillin, the tractor stalled. And it, as we saw it, they tried it again, and whenever he came just up to the tefillin, it stalled, and he didn't. It's interesting, where did the tefillin come from? What are they doing there in the middle of the field? So they found out that a ganav had stolen a Sefer Torah, broke into a sofer's office and stole a Sefer Torah, and stole tefillin, whatever. And for, I guess, whatever reason, he wasn't interested in a tefillin, he just dumped them in the field, and he was away with the Sefer Torah. He says, Agav here brings a little story with a shiloh attached to it. We're talking about tefillin. Says there was once a father whose son Nebuch went off the derech, and he said, told his father that he wants to go to India. So his father, of course, was against it, but he didn't know how to handle the situation because son, you know, he said no, son's going to listen anyways, whatever. So he decided he maybe can use a little, you know, bargaining chip here, and he says, "I'll tell you what," told his son, "make a deal with you. If you promise to put on tefillin every day when you're in India, take your tefillin with you, put on tefillin every day, so then I'll be behind you, and I'll send you money even to help support you while you're there in India. Is it a deal?" Son says, 100%, sounds great to me, no problem, good. So he takes his tefillin, goes to India. So a little bit of time goes by, whatever, he's there, and he calls his father, and he says, "Abba, how are you doing? I need some money." So his father says, "Well, are you putting on your tefillin like you promised?" So he says, "Yeah, of course." He says, "You're a liar. You're a liar. You're not putting on your tefillin." "So no tefillin, I'm not going to give you money." He says, "What do you mean?" I says, "No." He says, "You're lying. I'm not going to give you any money. We made a deal. Fine." So he hangs up. So a while later, the son was getting desperate, you know, he had no money. So he calls his father again. He says, "Abba, no, I really need money. Send me some money, please." He says, "Did you put on your tefillin?" He goes, "Yes, yes, I put on my tefillin." So the father says, "You're a liar. You didn't put on your tefillin. I'm not sending you money. The deal is a deal. You don't keep your part of the bargain, I'll keep my part of the bargain." So that was the end of that. It wasn't soon after that, the son couldn't, you know, survive there anymore without some money. So he ended up coming back. So when he, you know, was reunited with his father, of course they discussed the inyan, you know, and he says, "How come you didn't send me money?" And he said, "Well, we made a deal." And he said, "But I put on my tefillin." He says, "No, you didn't. I'm telling you, I know you didn't put on your tefillin." He says, "How could you know that? I'm in India, you're in Eretz Yisrael. How in the world do you know I didn't put on my tefillin?" He says, "Very simple." He says, "Open up your tefillin bag." So he says, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Open up your tefillin bag." So the kid opens up his tefillin bag, and sitting there right on the entrance is this huge sum of money. Right in the bag. So the father said, "Very simple. If you would have opened your tefillin bag, you would have saw all this money. You wouldn't have called me so fast for some money. The fact you asked me the money was obviously that you didn't open up your tefillin bag. That's how I knew you didn't put it." Very smart father. However, the shaila came up, was that mutter to do? Or is it okay to put money? You don't have to normally put other things in your tefillin bag besides your tefillin. That's a kedusha. Shaila is if... was that okay? He doesn't bring here the answer, but that was the shiloh that came up because of this story. Okay. Next, says Viftach Hashem SP. So Bilam goes on his donkey, and he's traveling. As we know, the donkey goes off the path, goes into the field, and what happens? Bilam gets upset and takes a stick and smashes his donkey, and he goes into the, you know, the skinny road and bumps his leg, whatever. Again, whack, hits his donkey, and he crouches down on him, and again, whack, smashes donkey. So the question is asked: David Yitzhak Nevensal, the Sefer Dudai Yitzhak, asks. He says, "I don't understand over here. Who's this Bilam? What was he hired to do? Curse Klal Yisrael? Meaning he had a tremendous power." Of speech, power with his mouth, right? He's able to curse Klal Yisrael. So why did he hit the donkey? Why did he curse him? We have to hit him for, right? He has such a power of speech. So instead of hitting him. He should have just wasted his energy. He could have just cursed him. So he says, answers, what do you have to say? You have to say that he wasn't able to. Why? Because Hashem closed up his mouth. Hashem took away his power of speech. Hashem wanted to show him, you know, you think you're such a big shot, oh, you can do what you want? No, your power of speech is in my hands. And even though normally you can say what you want and it has power, I'm going to show you, you can't always say what you want. And he took away from him the power to curse his donkey. And gave the power of speech to the donkey to show him that who's in control over here. I can take speech away from you and give it to your donkey. And that's why he had was forced to hit him, because he couldn't say what he wanted to say. Hashem took it away. He says, interesting little diuk in the psukim. We can see this in the psukim over here. It says at the beginning, when the servants of Balak came to Bilam and wanted to convince him to curse Klal Yisrael, so Bilam said to them, "Lo uchal lavor es pi Hashem Elokai. I can't, you know, transgress what Hashem says. Lasos ktana ugdola." So he's medayik. He says, "Lasos, to do." He says, I can't do anything against Hashem. Meaning, do I can't. Speech I could. I can say what I want, how I want, when I want, and that I have control of. But doing, I can't do whatever I want. That Hashem's in control. But he felt that speech-wise, he's in control. This was before he went out on his donkey, right? When they just came to him first. But then, when he went out to meet Balak, so he went on his donkey and he learned his lesson, as we said, when he was on a donkey, how he couldn't speak anymore, and the donkey ended up speaking, like we said. So Mela, when he met up with Balak, what did he say over there? Change of lashon. He says, "Hine bati elecha at, I'm coming to you now. Hayachol uchal deber me'uma. Hadavar asher yasim elokim bepi oto adaber." Now he didn't say what doing anymore. He said speech. He said, now only what Hashem puts in my mouth, then that I can say. Because I thought I was in control of my speech. I said, only Hashem can control me what I can do. But now we see, he says to Balak, oh, only what Hashem says for me to speak, I can speak. I learned my lesson with my donkey. I wanted to curse him, and I couldn't. I had to end up hitting him. And I saw there that Hashem is in control of my speech, and that's what he was telling now to Balak. Okay. It's interesting, Das Akenim, Ibalia Tosfos, it says by Bilam, it says by Yikar Elokim El Bilam. It says that Hashem came to, chanced upon, or whatever, came to Bilam. So he asks, why is it that by Bilam, the Rasha, it says Hashem came to Vayikar Elokim El Bilam. He came to Bilam. Whereas by Moshe Rabbeinu, the great Moshe Rabbeinu, what does it say? Vayikra El Moshe. He called Moshe to come. So why is it by Bilam Hashem goes to him? By Moshe Rabbeinu, he calls Bilam, but he calls Moshe. Moshe has to come to Hashem. Well, why? What's going on? It should be the opposite. So he answers with a mashal that there was once a king. He was sitting in his palace, and a metzora, a leper, came to the door of the palace, and he says he wants to go in to speak to the king. So the king looks up and he sees this, you know, guy full of tzaras, you know, leprosy, whatever, and he says, "Whoa!" He says, "Don't come in! Don't come into my palace! You're gonna mess up my cat." He says, "Wait right there! I'm coming to you! Don't come in! I'm coming to you!" Right. However, when the king's very hush of a friend, good friend, comes to knocking on the door and he sees him, what does he say? "Oh, come in, please! Come in, come in!" See, the same thing over here, right? Hashem says to Bilam, he says, "Wait where you are, I'm coming to you. I don't want you to get near me and coming to my palace. I'll come to greet you, it's okay." With Moshe Rabbeinu, and Hashem is in the Mishkan, he says to Moshe, "Maybe you crown Moshe, here come Moshe Rabbeinu. No problem, you can come to me, I welcome you." The Pasuk says, "Yasem Hashem davar bepi Bilam." So the Mefarshim are bothered. What does it mean? Hashem put davar, like a thing, right? Bepi Bilam, a davar in the pi, in the mouth of Bilam. So the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says something interesting. He says that Bilam, you know, wanted to curse Klal Yisrael, but in the end, Hashem made it that instead of curse words coming out of his mouth, brachas came out and nevuas for the Atid, for Klal Yisrael. But Hashem didn't want these beautiful praises and prophecies of Klal Yisrael to come out of this dirty mouth of this goy, right? So what did he do? He put a mechitza. He put a mechitza in the mouth of Bilam so that the word shouldn't come out of this dirty mouth. So he said, that says Or Chaim, that's v'yasam Hashem davar b'pi Bilam. What's a davar? A mechitza. Put a mechitza in Bilam's mouth so the beautiful word should come and not touch the, so to speak, the walls of the Rasha's mouth. And with this, he says, we can learn the lesson that we have to be careful. You know, when we want to say beautiful things, we want to daven, we want to learn, and beautiful words of Torah come out of our mouth, but we have to make sure our comes out of mouth that are clean. We don't have mechitzas to put in our mouth. Hashem doesn't do that to us every day, and we have to be careful. Therefore, that the nice things that come out of our mouth come out of a nice mouth, a clean mouth that wasn't used for cursing and lashon hara, etc., etc. And he says that's what we say before Baruch Shamar Hareini Mezamein Sp Lo Dos La Alel Shabeich Hasbori. What is this idea? Hineini Mezamein Sp. So yeah, that's what a person has to do, is prepare his mouth before he's Me'alel Shabeich Hatzeis Hashem, and make sure his mouth is clean. So even though we mentioned this before, I'll mention this story as mashal because it fits in beautiful. It's a cute story, so I'll say it again. That story of this king that was visiting a Sadr king from another country, and so he brought with him his entourage or whatever, and they came to visit the Sadr king, and they served him a beautiful banquet, a meal. So one of the things that was served was kishka. So the king, visiting king, tasted this food, and he said, "Psh, this is mamish Tom Gan Eden. This is unbelievable." He loved the kishka. So he turned to his chef who came along with him, and he said, you got to get the recipe, and we go back, and you got to make this for me. He says, "Unbelievable, I love this." So he says, okay, no problem, king. So he spoke to the chef of the other country, and he got all exactly the details, what to do, how to prepare the filling, whatever, put in the kishka, everything, fine. So they come back, the king says, "Okay, now I want you for dinner, I want you to make me this kishka." So, no problem, king, I got all the recipe down, no problem. So he serves the king, this night hospice, the kishka, puts it down, and the thing smells already terrible. Terrible smell. So he's like, "Oh," the king says, "I can't believe it." He couldn't even bring it towards his mouth. He put a little bit, and it's like, he's spitting it. He says, "Gross." He says, "What did you do? How could you?" He goes, "I don't know. I followed the recipe to the T, everything." He says, "It can't be. It tasted delicious by then. This is terrible. It smells. I can't." So he said, "I'm ordering you to go back to that country and speak to the chef again and find out what you did wrong. You obviously did something wrong." So he goes, okay. So he goes to the other thing, and other country again. He meets with the chef, and he says, "I don't know what happened. I followed the instructions or whatever." So the other chef's thinking. He says, "Oh, wait a second. Let me ask you something." He said, "Did you clean out the intestine, before you stuffed it with the filling?" He goes, "No, you didn't tell me to do that." He says, "Of course it smells. What do you think kishke is? It's the intestines with all the refuse of the animals in there. Yeah, of course, obviously you have to clean it out before you start putting any food in there. That was your mistake." So Mela, Nimshal is, so too, he says, our mouth is very nice, we want to praise and daven and learn and all good things come out of our mouth, but if mouth isn't clean, it's going to affect the words that are coming out of it. Okay. Let's end off with a maisa here. Lecha Yatzacha on the pasuk. There's a Rebbe was one of the Gedolei Admorim. Name was Rabbi Yerachmiel Mipeshischa. His father was well known. His father was the famous Yudi HaKadosh Mipeshischa. And Rabbi Yerachmiel was his son. Story goes that when he was, his father was Nifter, the Yudi HaKadosh was Nifter, so naturally all the Hasidim people of the town or whatever, just because they turned to the son, Rabbi Yochanan was a Talmud Chacham in his own right, you know, take over to be the Rebbe. So he refused adamantly, no, I'm going to be the Rebbe, I'm sorry, no. And Ad Kedei Kach, he was so adamant that once the Rosh Kehillah came and to try to convince him to be the Rebbe, and he took out an axe and he started waving it at the Rosh Kehillah like he wanted to kill him, like to chop his head off. So he said, what are you doing? He says, what do you mean? He says, Chazal say, you know, Habala hash lahargo, hashkem lahargo. He says, you want to kill me because you want to make me the Rebbe. I'm going to be the Rebbe. I'm not the Madrega to be a Rebbe. You know, you want to make me a Rebbe and I'm not. That's like, you want to kill me. So hashkem lahargo, I have to kill you first. Akereka. Anyway, so as a result, he didn't take the job at first of being the Rebbe. And instead, he learned a trade and he was a watch repairman. And he was actually a very big mumcha. He learned the trade very well. And he used to repair watches. And it was a parnasa. So, anyways, as years went on, he eventually decided to, yes, accept the job as the Rebbe. And he eventually became the Rebbe of Peshitsa. At that time, there was a boy in the town, a cheder boy, you know. And his watch stopped working. Couldn't get it to work. So he went to one of the goyim, the watch repairmen in the goyim, in the town, and they said, he said to the boy, why are you coming to me? He says, you have a yid, you know, by you, his name is Yerichmael, he's a top-notch, you know, watch repairman. Why don't you go to him? What are you coming to me for? So the boy innocently said, oh, okay, I didn't know that. So he didn't realize, a little kid, he doesn't realize Rebbe, no Rebbe, you know. So he goes to the Rebbe's house, and there's a line of people waiting to come in to the Rebbe for brachas, this, whatever. So the kids are fine, waiting in line, you know. So sure enough, came the kid's turn, he comes in, and the Rebbe says, what can I do for you, little boy? So he pulls out his watch, he says, Rebbe, can you fix my watch for me? So again, he doesn't know, he's an innocent little kid, doesn't realize he's a Rebbe, you know. So, in his extreme humility, you know, he says, sure, no problem, I'll fix your watch for you. So he opens his drawer, he takes out a little magnifying glass you put in your eye, you know, and he opens up the watch, and looks at it, and he fixes it. So he gives it back to the boy, he says, here, your watch works now. But before he sent the boy off, he said, let me tell you a little lesson that we can learn from watches. He says, what's that? He says, you know what? No one's wrong with your watch. He says, I took it apart and I saw that there's one spring and all these, you know, wheels and things moving around in the watch, right? The mechanics. He says, but at the bottom, there's a tiny little spring and that spring keeps everything going, right? Moving properly. And that spring was a little bit bent out of shape, and that little bent, that threw everything off. And because of that, your watch wasn't working. So he said to the boy, he says, so too. He says, that's the way with a human being as well. So a person has his midos or whatever, and sometimes you can have one mido that's a little bit off. One thing is a little bit crooked, a little bit bent out of shape, and that can affect the whole being. And it can change the person completely, lead to all kinds of bad things, etc. Just by one mido being a little bit off. It's like the watch, one little off, you know, bend in the spring affects the whole thing. So too, one little mido that's a little bit off can affect the whole person. Shmizoyche, the Masakin our midos, and Hashem should see our efforts and crown them. The coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, v'imhir v'yameinu.